Chapter 3 Hill of the Golden Dawn. On a wide, low hilltop some miles north and east of the city of Carrion, well away from any road or human habitation, a thin vertical slash of pure light appeared, taller than a man on a horse. The ground sloped away in every direction, undulating gently. Nothing more than occasional brush obscured the view for more than a mile, all the way to the surrounding forest. Brown grass fell as the light seemed to rotate, widening into a square opening in midair. A number of the dead stems were slit lengthwise, sliced finer than any razor could have, by a hole in the air. The instant the gateway was fully open, veiled Aiel poured out, men and maidens spreading in every direction to encircle the hill. Almost hidden in the torrent, four sharp-eyed Ashaman took up positions around the gateway itself, peering toward the encircling woodland. Nothing stirred except with the wind, dust, tall grass, and branches in the distance. Yet each Ashaman studied the vista with the fervor of a starving hawk searching for a rabbit. A rabbit watching for a hawk might have been his intent, but never with that air of menace. There was really no break in the flow. One moment it was a flood of Aiel, the next mounted Carrion and armsmen galloping out two by two, the crimson banner of light going up at their head as soon as it cleared the gateway. Without a pause, Dobrain drew his men aside and began forming them up a little down the slope, helmeted and gauntleted in precise ranks, lances raised to the same angle. Seasoned campaigners, they were ready to wheel and charge in any direction at his gesture. On the heels of the last Kyrianin, Perrin rode Stepper through, the dun passing in one stride from the hill below Demise Wells to the hill in Carrion, and ducked in spite of himself. The upper edge of the thing stood well above his head, but he had seen the damage a gateway could do, and had no wish to test whether they were safer standing still. Loyal and Daram followed close behind, the Ogier afoot with his long-hafted axe on his shoulder, bent his knees. And then the Two Rivers men, crouching on their saddles well beyond the gateway. Rad al-Dai carried the Red Wolf head banner, Perrin's, because everyone said it was, and Tel Luan the Red Eagle. Perrin tried not to look at those, especially the Red Eagle. The Two Rivers men wanted things both ways. He was a lord, so he had to have banners. He was a lord, but when he told them to get rid of those bloody banners, they never vanished for long. The Red Wolf had named him something he was not, and did not want to be, while the Red Eagle... More than 2,000 years after Manetheran died in the Trolloc Wars, close to 1,000 after Andor swallowed part of what once had been Manetheran, that banner was still as good as an act of rebellion for an Anderman. Legends still walked in some men's minds. Of course, it had been a few generations since Two Rivers folk had had any notion that they were Andermen, but Queen's minds did not change so easily. He had met the new Queen of Andor, what seemed a long time ago, in the Stone of Tyr. She had not been Queen then, and was not yet really until she was crowned in Camelon. But Elaine seemed a pleasant young woman, and pretty, though he was not partial to fair-haired women. A bit taken with herself, of course, as daughter-heir. Taken with Rand, too, if snuggling in corners meant anything. Rand meant to give her not only the Lion Throne of Andor, but the Sun Throne of Carrion. Surely she would be grateful enough to let the flying of a flag pass when it did not really mean anything. Watching the Two Rivers men deploy behind those banners, Perrin shook his head. It was a worry for another day, in any case. There was nothing like armsman's precision in the Two Rivers men, most boys like Todd, farmers' sons and shepherds, yet they knew what to do. Every fifth man took the reins of four more horses, while the other riders hurriedly dismounted, longbows already strung and in hand. Those on the ground straggled together in rough lines, looking around with more interest than anything else, but they checked their quivers with practiced gestures and handled their bows with familiarity. The great Two Rivers bows, even when strung, nearly as tall as the men who drew them. With those bows, not a man of them but could shoot farther than anyone outside the Two Rivers would believe, and hit what he aimed at. Perrin hoped there would be none of that today. Sometimes he dreamed of a world where there never was. And Rand? Do you believe my enemies have been asleep while I was away? Rand had said suddenly as they stood waiting for Dashiva to open the gateway. He had on a coat rooted out of the wagons, well-cut green wool, but hardly what he usually wore now. Short of taking the coat off a warder's back or a cotton sore from an Aielman, it was the only garment in the camp to fit him. Truth, he would have thought he insisted on silk and fine embroidery, the way he had had those wagons searched top to bottom yesterday and this morning. The wagons stretched out in line, teams hitched, canvas covers and iron hoops taken down. Karuna and the rest of the Sworn Sisters sat packed into the head wagon and not happy. They had ceased their protests as soon as they saw that protesting did no good, but Perrin could still hear coldly angry mutters. At least they rode. Their warders surrounded the wagon afoot, silent and stony, while the Aes Sedai prisoners stood in a rigid, sullen cluster ringed by every wise one who was not with Rand, which was to say all but Soralea and Amys. The prisoners' warders glowered in another clump 100 paces off, cold death waiting despite their injuries and Sisuayamon guards. Except for Karuna's big black, its reins held by Rand, and a mouse-colored mare with fine ankles for Min, the Aes Sedai's and warders' horses not assigned to Ashaman, or used to fill out wagon teams, that had caused a commotion worse than making their owners walk, were all tied to long lead lines fastened to the wagon's tailgates. "Do you believe it, Flynn? Grady?" One of the Ashaman waiting to go through first, the stocky fellow with a farmer's face, looked at Rand uncertainly, then at the leathery old man with the limp. Each wore a silver sword pin on his collar, but not the dragon. "Only a fool thinks his enemies stand still when he isn't looking, my lord dragon," the old man said in a gruff voice. He sounded like a soldier. "What about you, Dashiva?" Dashiva gave a start, surprised to be addressed. "I grew up on a farm." He tugged his sword belt straight, which it did not need. Supposedly they trained with the swords as much as with the power, but Dashiva did not seem to know one end from the other. "I don't know much about having enemies." Despite his awkwardness, there was a kind of insolence to him. But then the whole lot seemed weaned on arrogance. "If you stay near me," Rand said softly, "you will." His smile made Perrin shiver. He smiled while he gave orders to go through the gateway, as though they would be attacked on the other side. There were enemies everywhere, he told them. Always remember that. There were enemies everywhere, and you never knew who. The exodus continued unabated. Wagons rumbled from Dumai's Wells to Kyrian, the sisters in the first like statues of ice being lurched about. Their warders trotted alongside, hands gripping sword hilts and eyes never resting on one spot. Clearly they thought their Aes Sedai needed protection, as much from those already on the hill as from anyone who might appear. The wise ones marched through, herding their charges. A number used sticks to prod the Aes Sedai along, though the sisters made a good job pretending there were neither wise ones nor prods. The Shido Gaishan came, trotting in a column 4 wide under the gaze of a single maiden. She pointed to a place out of the way before darting to join the other Fardar Aes Mai, and the Gaishan knelt there in lines, naked as jaybirds and proud as eagles. The remaining warders followed under their guard, radiating a massed fury that Perrin could smell over everything else. Then Ruark with the rest of the Sisuayamon and maidens, and 4 more Ashaman, each leading a second horse for one of the first 4, and Narella and his winged guards with their red streamered lances. The Mayenners were puffed up over being the rear guard, laughing and shouting boasts to the Kyrianen of what they would have done had the Shido returned. Though, in fact, they were not last. Last of all came Rand on Karuna's gelding and Min on her mare. Soralea and Amys strode along to one side of the tall black horse, Nandera and 6 maidens to the other, and Dashiva led a placid-looking bay mare at their heels. The gateway winked out, and Dashiva blinked at where it had been, smiling faintly, then scrambled clumsily into the mare's saddle. He seemed to be talking to himself, but it was probably because his sword tangled in his legs, and he nearly fell. Surely he was not mad already. An army covered the hill, all arrayed for an attack that plainly was not coming. A small army, only a few thousand, though it would have seemed fair-sized before the Aiel brought their numbers across the dragon wall. Guiding his horse slowly toward Perrin, Rand scanned the countryside. The two wise ones followed closely, talking softly and watching him. Nandera and the maidens followed, watching everything else. Had Rand been a wolf, Perrin would have said he was testing the air. He carried the dragon scepter across his high saddle bow, a 2-foot length of spear decorated with a green and white tassel and carved with dragons, and now and then weighed it lightly in his hand as if to remind himself of it. When Rand reined in, he studied Perrin as intently as he had the surrounding country. "I trust you," he said finally, nodding. Min stirred in her saddle, and he added, "And you, Min, of course. And you too, Loyal." The Ogier shifted uncertainly, with a hesitant glance for Perrin. Rand looked around the hillside, at the Aiel, and the Ashaman, and all the rest. "So few I can trust," he whispered tiredly. His scent was jumbled enough for two men, anger and fear, determination and despair. And woven through it all, weariness. "Be sane," Perrin wanted to tell him. "Hold on." A wash of guilt held his tongue, though. Because it was the dragon reborn he wanted to say it to, not his friend since childhood. He wanted his friend to stay sane. The dragon reborn had to stay sane. "My lord dragon!" one of the Ashaman called abruptly. He looked little more than a boy, with dark eyes as big as any girl's, and neither sword nor dragon on his collar, but pride in his bearing. "Narishma," Perrin had heard him called. "To the southwest!" A figure had appeared, running out from the trees a mile or more away. A woman with skirts hiked to her thighs. To Perrin's eyes, she was clearly Aiel. A wise one, he thought, though there was no real way to tell at sight. He was just certain. The sight of her brought back all his edginess. Somebody out here, just where they happened to come out of the gateway, could not be good news. The shadow had been troubling Kyrian again when he set off after Rand. But to the Aiel, a wise one was a wise one, whatever her clan. They visited like neighbors over tea while their clans killed one another. Two Aiel trying to kill each other would step back to let a wise one pass between. Maybe yesterday had changed that, and maybe not. He exhaled wearily. At best, she could not be good news. Nearly everyone on the hill seemed to feel the same. Ripples of motion ran everywhere, spears hefted, arrows knocked. Kyrianen and Mayenners shifted in their saddles, and Aram drew his sword, eyes shining with anticipation. Loyal leaned on his tall axe and fingered the edge regretfully. The head was shaped like that of a huge wood axe, but engraved with leaves and scrolls, and inlaid with gold. The inlay was a trifle scuffed from the axe's late use. If he had to use it again, he would, but with as much reluctance as Perrin used his, and for many of the same reasons. Rand simply sat his horse and watched, face unreadable. Min edged her mare close enough to stroke his shoulder, like someone trying to soothe a mastiff with its hackles up. The wise ones also gave no sign of disturbance, but neither did they stay still. Soralea gestured, and a dozen of the women guarding the Aes Sedai broke off to join her and Amis, well away from Rand and out of even Perrin's hearing. Few had any gray in their hair, and Soralea's was the only lined face, but then there was hardly a gray hair to be seen on any of the wise ones here. The fact was, not many Aiel lived to have much gray hair. These women had position, though, or influence, however wise ones decided such things. Perrin had seen Soralea and Amis confer with the same lot before, though confer was not quite the word. Soralea spoke, with an occasional word from Amis, and the others listened. Adara raised a protest, but Soralea smothered it, apparently without breaking stride, then pointed out two of their number, Sotaren and Kosain. Immediately, they gathered their skirts over their arms and sped off toward the newcomer, legs flashing. Perrin patted Stepper's neck. No more killing. Not yet. The three wise ones met nearly half a mile from the hill and stopped. They spoke, just for a moment, and then all came on at a run, back to the hill, and straight to Sorlea. The newcomer, a youngish, long-nosed woman with a mass of incredibly red hair, spoke hurriedly. Sorlea's face grew stonier by the word. Finally, the red-haired woman finished, or rather Sorlea cut her short with a few words, and the lot turned to face Rand. None made a move toward him, though. They waited, hands folded at their waists and shawls looped over their arms, inscrutable as any Aes Sedai. "The Kara Karn," Rand muttered dryly under his breath. Swinging a leg over, he slid from his saddle, then helped Min to the ground. Perrin climbed down, too, and led Stepper after them to the Wise Ones. Loyal trailed along, and Aram followed on his horse, not dismounting until Perrin motioned him to. Aiel did not ride, not unless it was absolutely necessary, anyway, and they considered it rude for anyone to face them from horseback. Ruark joined them, and Gaul, who wore a scowl for some reason. It went without saying that Nandera and Sulan and the maidens came, too. The red-haired newcomer began as soon as Rand drew near.
"Baron Magana set watches everywhere you might possibly come back to the tree-killer city, Karakhan. But in truth, no one thought this would be..."
"Faragin," Sorlea said, sharply enough to draw blood. The red-haired woman's teeth clicked as she snapped her mouth shut, and she stared fixedly at Rand with brilliant blue eyes, avoiding Sorlea's glare. Finally, Sorlea took a breath and turned her attention to Rand.
"There is trouble in the tents," she said in a flat voice. "Rumors began among the tree-killers that you have gone to the White Tower with the Aes Sedai who came. Gone to bend knee to the Amarlan seat. None who know the truth dared speak, or the result would have been worse."
"And what is the result?" Rand asked quietly. He exuded tension, and Min began stroking his shoulder again.
"Many believe you have abandoned the Aiel," Amis told him just as quietly. "The bleakness has returned. Every day 1,000 or more throw down their spears and vanish, unable to face our future or our past. Some may be going to the Shido."
For a moment, disgust tinged her voice.
"There have been whispers that the true Karakarn would not give himself to the Aes Sedai. Indirian says if you have gone to the White Tower, it cannot be willingly. He is ready to take the Kodara north, to Tarvalan, and dance the spears with any Aes Sedai he finds. Or any wetlander. He says you must have been betrayed. Timolin mutters that if the tales are true, you have betrayed us, and he will take the Miagoma back to the Threefold Land. After he sees you dead. Mandalayne and Janwin hold their council, but they listen to Indirian and Timolin both."
Ruark grimaced, sucking air between his teeth. For an Aiel, this was as much as tearing his hair in despair. "It's not good news," Perrin protested, "but you make it sound a death sentence. Once Rand shows himself, the rumors are done." Rand scrubbed a hand through his hair.
"If that was so, Sorlea wouldn't look like she had swallowed a lizard.
For that matter, Nandera and Sulan looked as though their lizards were still alive on the way down. What haven't you told me yet, Sorlea?" The leather-faced woman gave him a thin, approving smile.
"You see beyond what is said. Good."
Her tone stayed flat as worked stone, though.
"You return with Aes Sedai. Some will believe that means you did bend knee. Whatever you say or do, they will believe you wear an Aes Sedai halter. And that is before it is known you are a prisoner. Secrets find crevices a flea could not slip through, and a secret known by so many has wings."
Perrin eyed Dobrain and Norella, watching with their men, and swallowed queasily. How many of those who followed Rand did so because he had the weight of the Aiel massed behind him? Not all, certainly, but for every man who had chosen because Rand was the dragon reborn, 5 or even 10 had come because the light shone brightest on the strongest ranks. If the Aiel broke away, or splintered...
He did not want to think about that possibility. Defending the two rivers had stretched his abilities as far as they would go, maybe farther. Taviran or not, he had no illusions. He was one of those men who ended up in the histories. That was for Rand. Village-sized problems were his limit. Yet he could not help himself. His mind churned. What to do if the worst came? Lists ran up in his head. Who would remain loyal, and who might try to slip away? The first list was sufficiently short, and the second sufficiently long to dry his throat. Too many people still schemed for advantage, as if they had never heard of the prophecies of the dragon or the last battle. He suspected some still would the day after Tarmogaden began. The worst of it was, most would not be dark friends, just people looking out for their own interests first. Loyal's ears hung limp. He saw it too. No sooner did Soralea finish speaking to Rand than her eyes whipped to one side in a glare to bore holes in iron. "You were told to remain in the wagon." Vera and Karuna came to an abrupt halt, and Alana nearly stumbled into them. "You were told not to touch the One Power without permission, but you listened to what was said here. You will learn that I mean what I say." Despite Sorlia's auguring stare, the three held their ground. Vera and Karuna with icy dignity, Alana with smoldering defiance. Loyal's huge eyes rolled toward them, then toward the Wise One. If his ears had been limp before, now they wilted completely, and his long eyebrows dropped to his cheeks. Poring uneasily over his mental lists, Perrin wondered absently how far the Aes Sedai intended to push. Eavesdropping with the power? They might find a reaction from the Wise Ones worse than Soralea's bark. From Rand, too. Not this time, however. Rand seemed unaware of them. He looked right through Soralea. Or maybe he listened to something nobody else could hear again. "What of the Wetlanders?" he said finally. "Kolaver has been crowned queen, hasn't she?" It was not really a question. Soralea nodded, thumb tapping the hilt of her belt knife, but her attention never left the Aes Sedai. Who was chosen king or queen among the Wetlanders was of small concern to Aiel, especially among the tree-killing Kariennin. An icicle stabbed into Perrin's chest. That Kolaver of House Saigon wanted the Sun Throne was no secret. She had schemed for it from the day Goldrian Riotin was assassinated, before Rand had even declared himself the Dragon Reborn, and kept scheming after it became public knowledge that Rand meant the throne for Elaine. Few knew she was a cold-blooded murderer, however, and Fael was in the city. At least she was not alone. Bane and Chiad would be close to her. They were maidens and her friends, maybe almost what the Aiel called near-sisters. They would not let her be harmed. The icicle would not go away, though. Kolaver hated Rand, and by extension, anyone close to Rand, such as perhaps the wife of a man who was Rand's friend. No, Bane and Chiad would keep her safe.
"This is a delicate situation."
Moving closer to Rand, remarkably, Karuna ignored Soralea. For such a scrawny woman, the Wise One had eyes like hammers.
"Whatever you do can have serious repercussions. I..."
"What has Kolaver said about me?" Rand asked Soralea in a too casual tone. "Has she harmed Berlane?" Berlane, the first of Mayenne, was who Rand had left in charge of Kyrian. Why did he not ask about Fael?
"Berlane Sir Paendrag is well," Soralea murmured, without stopping her study of the Aes Sedai. Outwardly, Karuna stayed calm despite being interrupted and ignored, but the gaze she fixed on Rand could have frozen a forge fire solid with the bellows pumping. For the rest, Soralea gestured to Faragin.
The red-haired woman gave a start and cleared her throat. Plainly, she had not expected to be allowed a word. She put dignity back on like a hastily donned garment.
"Kolaver Saigon says you have gone to Camelin, Karakarn, or maybe to Tyr, but wherever you have gone,
All must remember that you are the dragon reborn and must be obeyed."
Ferengin sniffed. The dragon reborn was no part of Aiel prophecies, only the Karakarn.
"She says you will return and confirm her on the throne. She speaks often to the chiefs, encouraging them to move the spears south. In obedience to you, she says. She does not see the wise ones, and hears only the wind when we speak."
This time her sniff was a fair approximation of Soralia's. No one told the clan chiefs what to do, but angering the wise ones was a bad way to start convincing the chiefs of anything.
It made sense to Perrin, though, to the part of him that could think of anything besides Fael. Kolaver probably had never paid enough attention to the savages to realize the wise ones did more than dispense herbs. But she would want every last Aiel out of Kyrian. The question was, given the circumstances, had any of the chiefs listened to her? But the question Rand asked was not the obvious.
"What else has happened in the city? Anything you've heard, Ferengin? Maybe something that might only seem important to a wetlander?"
She tossed her red mane contemptuously.
"Wetlanders are like sand flies, Karakarn. Who can know what they find important? Strange things sometimes happen in the city, so I have heard, as they do among the tents. People sometimes see things that cannot be. Only for a time what cannot be is. Men, women, children have died."
Perrin's skin prickled. He knew she meant what Rand called bubbles of evil, rising from the Dark One's prison like froth in a fetid swamp, drifting along the pattern till they burst. Perrin had been caught in one once. He never wanted to see another.
"If you mean what the wetlanders do," she went on, "who has time to watch sand flies, unless they bite? That minds me of one thing. I do not understand it, but perhaps you do. These sand flies will bite sooner or later."
"What sand flies? Wetlanders? What are you talking about?"
Ferengin was not as good as Soralia at that level look, yet no wise one that Perrin had seen appreciated others' impatience. Not even the chief of chiefs.
Thrusting her chin up, she gathered her shawl and answered.
3 days ago, the tree killers, Caroline Damodred and Toram Riotin, approached the city. They issued a proclamation that Kolaver Saigon is a usurper, but they sit in their camp south of the city and do nothing except send a few people into the city now and then. Away from their camp, 100 of them will run from one Algaid Siswai, or even a Gashine. The man called Darlan Cisnera and other tyrants arrived by ship below the city yesterday and joined them. They have been feasting and drinking ever since, as if celebrating something. Tree-killer soldiers gather in the city at Kolaver Saigon's command, yet they watch our tents more than they do the other wetlanders or the city itself. They watch and do nothing. Perhaps you know the why of all this, Karakarn, but I do not, nor does Bear or Magana, or anyone else in the tents.
Lady Caroline and Lord Toram led the Kyrianin who refused to accept that Rand and the Aiel had conquered Kyrian, just as High Lord Darlan led their counterparts in Tyr. Neither revolt amounted to much. Caroline and Toram had been sitting in the foothills of the Spine of the World for months, making threats and claims, and Darlan the same down in Haddon Merc. But not any longer, it seemed. Perrin found himself running a thumb lightly along the edge of his axe. The Aiel were in danger of slipping away, and Rand's enemies were coming together in one place. All it needed now was for the Forsaken to appear, and Savannah with her Shido. That would put the cream on the honey cake. Yet none of it was any more important than whether somebody saw a nightmare walking. Fael had to be safe. She just had to be. "Better watching than fighting," Rand murmured thoughtfully, listening to something unseen again. Perrin agreed with Rand wholeheartedly. Just about anything was better than fighting. But Aiel did not see it that way, not when it came to enemies. From Ruark to Soralia, Ferengin to Nandera and Sulin, they stared as though Rand had said sand was better to drink than water. Ferengin drew herself up practically on tiptoe,
She was not particularly tall for an Aiel woman, not quite Taran's shoulder, but she appeared to be trying to put herself nose to nose.
"There are a few more than 10,000 in that wetlander camp," she said reprovingly, "and fewer in the city. They can be dealt with easily. Even Endirion remembers that you command no wetlander killed, except in self-defense. But they will make trouble left to themselves. It does not help that there are Aes Sedai in the city.
Who can know what they—"
"Aes Sedai." The words came out cold, Rand's knuckles white on the dragon scepter. "How many?"
At the smell of him, the skin between Perrin's shoulders crawled. Suddenly he could feel the Aes Sedai prisoners watching, and Bera and Karuna and the rest. Soralea lost all interest in Karuna. Her hands planted themselves on her hips, and her mouth narrowed.
"Why did you not tell me this?"
"You gave me no chance, Soralea,"
Faragin protested a touch breathily, shoulders hunching. Blue eyes swung to Rand, and her voice firmed.
"There may be as many as 10 or more, Karakhan. We avoid them, of course, especially since—"
Back to Soralea and breathiness.
"You did not want to hear about the wetlanders, Soralea. Only our own tents. You said so."
To Rand, her back straightening.
"Most of them stay beneath the roof of Arlen Dulain, Karakhan, and seldom leave it."
To Soralea, hunching.
"Soralea, you know I would have told you everything. You cut me short."
As she realized how many were watching, and how many beginning to smile, among the wise ones anyway, Faragin's eyes grew wild and her cheeks reddened. Her head swung between Rand and Soralea, and her mouth worked, but no sound came out. Some of the wise ones began laughing behind their hands. Idara did not bother with a hand. Ruark threw back his head and roared. Perrin certainly did not feel like laughing. And Aiel could find something funny in having a sword stuck through him. Aes Sedai on top of everything else. Light. He cut straight through to what was important.
"Faragin, my wife, Fael, is she well?"
She gave him a half-distracted stare, then visibly pulled together the tatters of her poise.
"I think Fael Ebara is well, Saiker," she said with cool composure. Or almost.
She tried to sneak glances at Soralea from the corner of her eye. Soralea was not amused, or anything close to it. Arms folded, she gave Faragin a perusal that made the one she had given Karuna seem mild. Amis put a hand on Soralea's arm.
"She is not at fault,"
the younger woman murmured, too softly to reach any ears but the leathery wise ones and Perrin's. Soralea hesitated, then nodded. The flaying glare faded to her usual cantankerness. Amis was the only one Perrin had seen able to do that, the only one Soralea did not trample down when she got in her way. Well, she did not trample Ruark, but with him it was more a boulder ignoring a thunderstorm. Amis could make it stop raining. Perrin wanted more of Faragin. She thought Fael was well? But before he could open his mouth, Karuna bulled in with her usual tact.
"Now listen to me carefully," she told Rand, gesturing emphatically under his nose. "I called the situation delicate. It is not. The situation is complex beyond your imagining. So fragile a breath could shatter it. Bera and I will accompany you to the city. Yes, yes, Ilana, and you as well."
She waved away the slender Aes Sedai impatiently. Perrin thought she was trying that looming trick. She did seem to be peering down her nose at Rand. Though tall as she was, he stood head and shoulders taller.
"You must let yourself be guided by us. One wrong move, one wrong word, and you may deliver to Kyrian the same disaster you gave Taraban and Ara-Doman. Worse, you can do incalculable damage to matters about which you know almost nothing."
Perrin winced. The whole speech could not have been better designed to inflame Rand. But Rand simply listened till she was done, then turned to Soralea. "Take the Aes Sedai to the tents. All of them, for now. Make sure everyone knows their Aes Sedai. Let it be seen that they hop when you say toad. Since you hop when the Karakhan says it, that should convince everybody I'm not wearing an Aes Sedai leash." Karuna's face grew bright red. She smelled of outrage and indignation so strongly that Perrin's nose itched.
Bera tried to calm her, without much success, while shooting you ignorant young lout looks at Rand, and Alana bit her lip in an effort not to smile. Going by the odors drifting from Soralea and the others, Alana had no reason to be pleased. Soralea gave Rand a slash of smile. "Perhaps, Karakarn," she said dryly. Perrin doubted that she hopped for anyone. "Perhaps it will." She did not sound convinced. With another shake of his head, Rand stalked off with Min, shadowed by the maidens and issuing orders as to who was to go with him, and who with the wise ones. Ruark began ordering the Sisuayamon. Alana followed Rand with her eyes. Perrin wished he knew what was going on there. Sorley and the others watched Rand, too, and they smelled anything but gentle. Varegan was standing alone, he realized. Now was his chance. But when he tried to catch her up, Soralea and Demise and the rest of the council surrounded her, neatly shouldering him away. They moved some distance before they began showering her with questions, the sharp looks directed at Karuna and the two other sisters leaving no doubt they would tolerate no further eavesdropping. Karuna appeared to be considering it, glowering till it seemed a wonder her dark hair was not standing on end. Bera was speaking to her firmly, and without trying, Perrin heard sensible and patience, cautious and foolish. Which applied to whom was not evident. "There will be fighting when we reach the city," Aram sounded eager.
"Of course not,"
Loyal said stoutly. His ears twitched, and he peered uncomfortably at his axe.
"There won't be, will there, Perrin?"
Perrin shook his head. He did not know. If only the other wise ones would leave Faragan alone just for a few moments. What did they have to talk about that was so important?
"Women," Gaul muttered, "are stranger than drunken wetlanders."
"What?" Perrin said absently. What would happen should he simply push through the circle of wise ones? After she had read his mind, Adara gave him a pointed frown. So did some of the others. Sometimes it did seem women could read men's minds. Well,
"I said women are strange, Perrin Ibarra. Chiad told me she would not lay a bridal wreath at my feet. She actually told me."
The Aielman sounded scandalized.
"She said she would take me for a lover, her and Bane, but no more."
Another time that would have shocked Perrin, though he had heard it before. Aiel were incredibly free about such things.
"As if I am not good enough for a husband," Gaul snorted angrily. "I do not like Bane, but I would marry her to make Chiad happy. If Chiad will not make a bridal wreath, she should stop trying to entice me. If I cannot catch her interest well enough for her to marry me, she should let me go."
Perrin frowned at him. The green-eyed Aielman was taller than Rand, nearly a head taller than he.
"What are you talking about?"
"Chiad, of course. Have you not been listening? She avoids me, but every time I see her, she pauses long enough to make sure I have seen her. I do not know how you wetlanders do it, but with us, that is one of the ways a woman uses. When you least expect her, she is in your eyes, then gone. I did not even know she was with the maidens until this morning."
"You mean she's here?" Perrin whispered.
That icicle was back now, a blade, hollowing him out.
"And Bane? Here too?"
Gaul shrugged.
"One is seldom far from the other. But it is Chiad's interest I want, not Bane's." "Burn your bloody interest," Perrin shouted.
The wise ones turned to look at him. In fact, people all over the hillside did. Karuna and Bera were staring, faces entirely too thoughtful. With an effort, he managed to lower his voice. He could do nothing about the intensity, though.
"They were supposed to be protecting her. She's in the city, in the royal palace with Kolaver. With Kolaver! And they were supposed to be protecting her!"
Scratching his head, Gaul looked at Loyal.
"Is this wetlander humor? Fael Ibarra is out of short skirts."
"I know she's not a child,"
Perrin drew a deep breath. It was very hard keeping a level tone with his belly full of acid.
Loyal, will you explain to this... to Gaul that our women don't run around with spears? That Kolaver wouldn't offer to fight Fahil? She'd just order somebody to cut her throat, or throw her off a wall, or...
The images were too much. He was going to empty his stomach in a moment. Loyal patted him awkwardly on the shoulder.
Perrin, I know you're worried. I know how I'd feel if I thought anything happened to Aerith.
The tufts on his ears quivered. He was a fine one to talk. He would run as hard as he could to avoid his mother and the young Ogier woman she had chosen for him.
Ah, well. Perrin, Fahil is waiting for you safe and sound. I know it. And you know she can care for herself. Why, she could care for herself and you and me and Gaul as well.
His booming voice sounded forced, and it quickly faded to grave seriousness.
Perrin, you know you can't always be there to protect Fahil, however much you want to. You are Taviran. The pattern spun you out for a purpose, and it will use you for that purpose.
Burn the pattern, Perrin growled. It can all burn, if it keeps her safe.
Loyal's ears went rigid with shock, and even Gaul looked taken aback. What does that make me? Perrin thought. He had been scornful of those who scribbled and scrabbled for their own ends, ignoring the last battle and the Dark One's shadow creeping over the world. How was he different from them? Rand reined the black in beside him. Are you coming?
I'm coming, Perrin said bleakly.
He had no answer for his own questions, but he knew one thing. To him, Fahil was the world.